be talking about some molecular work, mostly molecular phylogenetics that I've been doing related to hemlock woolly adelgid. And my talk will have three different parts. I'll talk about some work I've been doing with the pest itself, with the host plants, with hemlock, and with a group of natural enemies that are being evaluated for biological control of the adelgid. So just a little bit of background for those of you not all that familiar. If you do have this insect in your backyard, you're probably used to seeing something like this on your trees. Then the insect builds up to just very high population densities, just overwhelming the tree. And on the other side shows a bunch of dead trees at the top of this waterfall in New York. And for good measure, I put in another example of what you normally see in the East Coast these days. This is a very sick hemlock tree. So we have a pretty good idea of when this insect was introduced and how it spread in eastern North America. The green shows the native range of hemlock, and you can see the extent of its spread in 2006. So it was first observed in 1951. We have museum specimens from Richmond, Virginia. It was the first record of this insect in eastern North America. And this just shows a few more pictures of what this looks like. There's a scanning EM of the first instar. You can see its stylets inserted into the stem. These same first instars settled at the base of needles on a hemlock branch. And this is a few instars later when you get that white woolly wax building up. And over here is a slide-mounted adult. What these look like. So to set the stage a little bit for this work, this shows the distribution of hemlock around the world. There are 9 different hemlock species that are commonly recognized, and if we look, we can find adelgids on all 9 of these species. And right now, they're all considered the same species of adelgid, Adelgis sugi. So there are 2 species of hemlock in eastern North America. There's Suga canadensis that has a very broad distribution, and Caroliniana that has a very limited distribution in the southern Appalachians. On the west coast, there are 2 species. There's western hemlock, Suga heterophylla, that tends to be at lower elevations, and Mertensiana, the mountain hemlock, that tends to be at higher elevations. There's a similar story in Japan, where we have Suga seiboldii, which tends to be at low elevations in southern parts of Japan, and diversifolia, which tends to be at higher elevations and in the north. In China, there's Suga chinensis, which has a very broad distribution throughout mainland China. Suga dumosa, the Himalayan hemlock, which has a distribution through the Himalayas and into southwestern China. And Suga forestii, which is a species that's described as having a very limited distribution in Yunnan province and Sichuan province, where these 2 species come together. So previously, it's been assumed, or some people have speculated, that the adelgid came to the East Coast from Asia via the West Coast. And the reason why people have speculated this is that the species was first described from insects collected in the West Coast in 1924 by Anand. And there's also a record by Crystal in 1916 of damage by the then undescribed adelgid on Western hemlock on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. And also, excuse me, Japanese hemlock has been available directly from Japan during the 1880s and 1920s from different catalogs such as this Yokohama nursery. So this kind of information led people to believe that, well, it probably went to the West Coast first, then came to the East Coast. But with some phylogenetic work using mitochondrial DNA, we found that that's probably not the case. And just to go through some of the results that we got from this data, first we found that the adelgids in China and Taiwan are probably different enough to be considered another species. So the genetic distance from these Chinese and Taiwanese insects is about the same range of what we see between other well-described species of adelgids. Also, the insects in eastern North America are very clearly introduced from Japan. We found so far just one mitochondrial haplotype in eastern North America, and these match exactly to some insects collected from Suga seiboldii in southern Japan. And kind of surprisingly, the insects in western North America do seem to be endemic. There's a lot more genetic variation on the West Coast, which suggests that these actually have been there for a long time and have been diversifying in western North America. And they don't match any of the other samples that we have so far from the other areas. And also, somewhat surprisingly, we did find a second lineage of adelgids in Japan, and so far these seem to be associated with Suga diversifolia. So there may be some kind of host-associated divergence going on within Japan. So you've taken this a bit further and have done a DNA barcoding project. We had a poster describing this in more detail yesterday. For those of you that don't know, DNA barcoding is an initiative. It's an international cooperative effort to develop a standardized method to use short DNA sequences as diagnostic markers for species identification. And the gene fragment that's been used mostly for animals is about 650 base pairs of CO1. And within this initiative, there's also a project that was initiated by Bob Footit in collaboration with Paul Ebert at the Canadian Barcode of Life Network in Guelph to barcode aphidoidea. So we've been trying to add as many adelgid species as we can for this. So as we're out collecting, we try to get as many adelgid species and samples within species as we can. Just a little background, there are about 70 described adelgid species. But many of these, it's likely that the same species has been described multiple times. So adelgids have many morphological forms within a species, and there are very few morphological characters that are actually very useful for species delineation. So this just shows, in general, where you can find adelgids. And it's basically where you find Picea, which is thought to be their ancestral primary host. And these are a few more species that you might be familiar with: the balsam woolly adelgid, Adelgis picea, which is a very serious pest of fir trees. Adelgis abiatus, the eastern spruce gall adelgid. This is kind of a typical adelgid gall that you would see. And Adelgis coolii, which is native to the west coast and alternates between spruce and Douglas fir. So we have so far 537 different samples. There are more being processed. And this just shows a neighbor joining tree showing the relationships among those. And I put some pictures of slide-mounted adelgids just to remind me to tell you that all these have been vouchered with morphological slide specimens. And I realize you can't read anything that's going on there, so we're going to zoom in a little bit on the hemlock adelgids. And we can see that the CO1, the barcoding region, does seem to be a pretty good marker for distinguishing these different geographic lineages of hemlock adelgids. So the different insects from China, Taiwan, Western North America, Japan do cluster together. So this could be a good marker to use for intercepting and identifying adelgids and keeping them from being moved into new areas where they're not native. Barcodes are also good for trying to figure out what the life cycle of adelgids are. They have very complex life cycles with three different kinds of life cycle that you can have. You can have a holocyclic cycle, where there's host alternation between spruce primary host, where there's sexual reproduction and gall formation, and between a secondary host, either larix, pseudosuga, suga abies, or pinus, where there's only asexual reproduction, a series of these wingless asexual morphs, and a certain proportion of these are winged, which can fly back to the primary host. And there are also two different kinds of anholocyclic life cycles, where you can just get a continuation of these wingless asexual forms on a secondary host, or an alternation of the gall forming, the fundatrices, which begin formation of the gall, and the inhabitants of the gall alternating back and forth. And again, this is only asexual reproduction. So we know in eastern North America, what we have is just, on hemlock, is just this continuation of a series of these asexual wingless forms. And we do get some of the winged forms which fly out and presumably cannot find a suitable spruce host to complete the life cycle. In Asia, we're not really sure what's going on. It's been reported that it may be host alternating in Asia. And using these DNA barcodes, we have been able to match up the hemlock woolly adelgid with insects that we've collected off of spruce in China. We collected them off of Picea lekiangensis in Yunnan. And in Japan, we've collected hemlock adelgids on Picea pallida. And this shows a picture of what the gall looks like in China. It's a very distinctive, round, kind of spiky gall, pretty very distinctive for adelgids. And in Japan, it's very similar. The ones on your left show some dried up galls from Japan. So the next step, what I'm working on now, is to use microsatellite markers to to further elucidate the genetic structure of hemlock adelgids in its endemic areas, and we want to try to link population genetic structure to ecological and life history variation. So I'm going to go through a series of questions that we hope to answer with this next step in the project. So we want to know if hemlock woolly adelgid in eastern North America was introduced once or multiple times, and what are the genetic consequences of introduction? And this is in collaboration with Annie Paradis and Joe Elkington at UMass, who are working on getting data from the introduced range, and I'm working on the native range, and we'll put the data together and see what we get. We also want to know what the geographic and climatic limits of the source population are in Japan. And by finding this out, maybe we can, if we can understand and get an accurate picture of the geographic range of the host of the source population and correlates with climate factors, this may help understand the adaptive potential of the introduced population and provide a more accurate prediction of the eventual extent of its spread. We also want to ask, what is the life cycle and reproductive mode of the hemlock woolly adelgid in its native range, similar to what we did with the barcodes, but in much more detail? And if one of the ways that this could be used is if we know that it could help predict the efficacy of hemlock woolly adelgid natural enemies that are being introduced for biological control. So for example, if the adelgids in Japan are host alternating, the natural enemies in Japan that are being considered for biocontrol may be adapted to track this kind of life cycle and not necessarily the anholocyclic life cycle that it has in the introduced range. We're also interested in finding out if different populations of the adelgid are adapted to different host plants. So if we can identify with microsatellites different host-associated populations, then we can design common garden experiments to really test whether there are host preferences among these different groups. And finally, how can hemlock woolly adelgid populations that differ in biology be identified and monitored? So once we've identified these different groups, we can look for whether there are consistent morphological differences, and we can also further test whether the DNA barcodes are good for distinguishing the different groups. So to do this, we'll be collecting more samples across the native ranges of the adelgid in Western North America, China, and especially focusing on Japan. And this picture just shows the sites where we have samples from so far, and we'll go revisit these sites and sample more extensively using a nested hierarchical sampling scheme that'll let us look at variation at the level of the branch, tree, stand, and region to get a really good picture of the variation. So I'll switch gears a little bit and start talking about the hemlock phylogeny. And just to remind you, these are the 9 species of hemlock around the world. And we reconstructed the phylogeny of hemlock using ITS and chloroplast DNA. I'm just going to show you the chloroplast DNA results. ITS largely agrees with that, except it's much more messy, so I'm going to show you the cleaner results. So this is based on about 3,500 base pairs of chloroplast DNA. And I'll go through some of the results relevant to the adelgid. So the two Western North American species are sister to the remaining species. And Suga canadensis, remember the eastern hemlock, is sister to a clade that includes the other eastern species, Suga caroliniana, and all the Asian species. So the two eastern North American species are not sister to each other. And there's a similar situation in Japan, where Suga seiboldii is less related to Suga diversifolia, the other Japanese species, and it's actually more related to the species in China. So of these 4 species in Japan and eastern North America, where we have sympatric species, of those 4, only Suga diversifolia has high levels of resistance to the adelgid. We also found some cryptic diversity within Suga, which was surprising. Hemlock from Oolong Island, Korea, which is a small volcanic island off the coast of Korea. These hemlocks have always been considered to be Suga seiboldii morphologically, but it turns out that they're actually closer related to diversifolia, although they are distinct, so it may be a new species. And this just shows where that little island is. It's a tiny volcanic island that formed about 2 million years ago, and it's about equidistant between Korea and Japan. So how is this information being used, putting some of the resistance, hemlock resistance studies in context? So this shows some results from a paper by Anthony Lagoante and Mike Montgomery where they were looking at the terpene components in the different hemlock species, and they found that the two eastern species, Caroliniana and Canadensis, actually have very close terpene compositions, although they're not closely related to each other. Are we frozen? There we go. And so another recent paper, they speculated using their terpene information and also understanding of the relationships among hemlocks. They speculated that Eastern North American hemlocks historically have had considerable pressure from native caterpillars. And based on fossil records, it's been hypothesized about 5,000 years ago that defoliator outbreaks might actually have caused hemlocks to become almost extinct. So they thought that faced with pressure from defoliators and the absence of native sucking insects such as adelgids and scales, the chemistry of these eastern hemlocks may have drifted away from protection against sucking insects, which is why these two species have maybe independently, because they have different ancestries, developed susceptibility to the adelgid. And another way that this information is being used, there's some resistance breeding work being done at the U.S. National Arboretum, where they've tried to hybridize Canadensis with the Asian species. That's always been unsuccessful, but they have been successful crossing Caroliniana with the Asian species, which makes sense because Caroliniana does fall into a clade with the Asian species. So these hybrids have been planted since 2004, and they've been starting to grow. I guess my pictures are big. And some of these hybrids have turned out to be very resistant to the hemlock, such as, or to the adelgid, such as this very nice looking hybrid between Chinensis and Caroliniana. And finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about some work I've been doing with a natural enemy group that are being evaluated and released for biocontrol of the adelgid. It's a genus of beetle called Laricobius. They're deodontid beetles. And the major players are listed here on the left. Laricobius nigrinus is native to western North America, and it has been introduced into eastern North America as a biocontrol of hemlock woolly adelgid. We also have a native species, Laricobius rubidus, which is here in eastern North America. There's another native western North American species, Laricobius laticolus, which is thought to be more associated with the Adelgis coolii. Another species, Laricobius ericksonii, was introduced back into eastern and western North America back in the 50s and 60s in attempts to control the balsam woolly adelgid. And as far as I know, it hasn't been collected again since the 60s. There's also another undescribed species from Japan, which is being now evaluated as another biocontrol against the adelgid. So as I mentioned, Laricobius nigrinus has been released. More than 30,000 beetles have been released so far. And they've been focusing on releasing it along the leading edge of adelgid activity, where population density is low but growing. So after they release the beetles, they do post-release monitoring, where they go out into the field and beat trees or clip off branches and get larvae. And to be able to identify those larvae, you have to rear them out to adult. The native and the introduced species can't be distinguished as larvae. It's a long process, expensive. They pupate and estivate in the soil, and many of them die at that point. It's very hard to get all of them to emerge as adults. And when you get adults, you use, among other things, you have to dissect out the male genitalia and compare, and if it looks more like this, it's one species, more like this, it's the other species. So it's pretty difficult to distinguish the different species. So I've done some phylogenetic work with Laricobius. This tree includes CO1, ITS2, and EF1 alpha. It's just a neighbor joining tree at this point. It's a work in progress. I'm still hoping to get some outgroups to use here. So we have the Asian species. We also have a Chinese species, Kangdiensis, and the undescribed Japanese species. And then we have one sample of Laricobius caucasicus from the Caucasus, they group together. The European species, Laricobius ericksonii, Laocoolus, the other Western North American species, and then we have Nigrinus and Rubidus. So Laricobius nigrinus, we found, was very closely related to Laricobius rubidus. And for what it's worth, there was about 1.8% sequence divergence in CO1 between these two species. So we probably should be looking into whether these two species can hybridize, and if so, what are the implications for control? We did find that there were 12 diagnostic sites in CO1 that do distinguish the two species, and we used these diagnostic sites to develop an RFLP assay to be able to distinguish them very quickly and easily. So the RFLP, the basic idea is if you have a larva, you can do the assay, you amplify the CO1 gene, use restriction enzymes to cut it, and it gives you a different pattern for the different species, and then you can figure out which species it is. So it's inexpensive, fast, reliable, and it's now being used by Gina Davis and Scott Salem at Virginia Tech to monitor the establishment and spread of Nigrinus. And I want to thank all these individuals who have been involved in the project. Thank you. Questions? Why doesn't it? Why doesn't it? I'm not sure. I mean, it's hard to say. There just aren't any native species on our hemlocks there. You know, one very speculative possibility is when there was a very rapid and extensive reduction of the range of hemlock about 5,000 years ago, and they're not really sure why, but they've maybe implicated an herbivore outbreak in that. So maybe the population just got so low that they couldn't support the adelgid, or that may, it's really hard to say going back that far. Dan? The Western North American species do seem to be resistant to the adelgid. You know, they've been doing some common garden work here on the East Coast. But another thing to keep in mind is that in the West Coast, it's a different adelgid. So if we're looking at resistance in the West compared to resistance in the East, Western hemlocks growing in the East, we're looking at different adelgid. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. But yes, the Western hemlocks do seem to be resistant. Mountain hemlock, for sure, you can hardly ever find adelgids on it.